We'll take your phone calls with Michael Horn. The incredible case of Billy Meier next on Coast to Coast AM. Back with Michael Horn, back with your phone calls as well. But, Michael, let's let you finish up about that nighttime photography you were talking about.
Yes, thank you, George. Well, here's the thing. Zahi, Professor Zahi.
Michael, we're going to have to call you back on your cell phone again. This is unacceptable on the air.
Okay. Right here.
So, Tom, call him on the cell phone. Let's hook that up. And let's get that going, because that is as bad a phone line as I have ever heard. And as soon as you get him, let me know. Let's go to Cornelius, though, and we'll chat a little bit. Corny, you and me.
Oh, Lord, George, I hadn't heard that word since I was in high school, corny.
I bet you were a genius in high school.
Oh, no, far from that, George. Hey, since we can talk for a little bit, have you been out near Ferguson to look around and see what's going on?
Yes, I sure did. I went out there a few weeks ago, and things are calm now. And, you know, the media, Cornelius, blows it out of proportion. It was a smaller, contained area. They make it sound like the entire city of St. Louis was burning. And, you know, the problem out there hasn't gone away. But things are a little calm. Anyways, I think we have Michael Horn back on. So, Cornelius, hold on. I'm going to put you on hold because I want to get back to you with your question. But, Michael, let's see if we got a better connection with you now. Go ahead.
Hi, George. How's this one?
Yeah, that sounds much better. So, okay. Anyways, back to that nighttime photograph. How important is that?
Well, it's super important because, you know, there's been a lot of controversy in the case about the photographs. And people carried on about, where are the negatives and the space photos, which Meier took over 1,300 of which, and that the Meier and the group have had to disavow, because it appears that most of them, of course, were stolen, but the ones that survived may well have been manipulated. Okay, so how can the average person, if they're not going to simply take the word of experts, dating back, by the way, to 1980, you have Michael Malin, Mars Mission, who authenticated Meier's photos. You have several other people. People don't know this. Meier's photos were authenticated. Even his films were authenticated by Nippon TV. But fast forward to today. We have a nighttime photo, a gold object against a black background. Skeptics say, it's just a gold model against the curtain. So Professor Zahi, for whatever reason, takes that photo after he's already proved that the case is real with his 74-page analysis. He takes this particular photo and he drops it into Photoshop. He heightens the brightness, and he lowers the contrast. And what happens, and there's a link to it, people can see this and then do it themselves. Now we see that this is no model against a black background. It is a photograph of a craft taken from above the craft while the craft is hovering over a gravel road that is bordered by a grassy area, a grassy field, and there's a fence post visible. Now, understand this. This is a 35-millimeter film photograph, and it has been circulated on my site and others as a digital image of the 35-millimeter film photograph. You can grab it off of my site and drop it into Photoshop and do it yourself, which is why I said that it'll take you longer to open Photoshop than it will for you to prove to yourself that this is an object photographed in 1981 that was not made on this earth by a man named Billy Edward Albert Meier while he was in another craft above the object, hovering above a gravel road bordered by a grassy area with a fence post. Now, if they drop this photo and they do it and then they don't get that this is real, then they have to debunk themselves. And Meier himself never, ever, ever pointed out this photo, and the fact also, something that I discovered several years back that nobody noticed, the dimensions on this craft changed because a part of the craft elevates away from the body of the craft in the nighttime photos. All of this was never mentioned by Meyer. Professor Zahi stumbles upon all of this accidentally, and now literally anybody with a computer loaded with Photoshop can go, I just authenticated the Billy Meyer UFO case. Now, what's the reason for this case, and what are we going to do about
it? That's incredible. Okay, now we go to the phones. Cornelius in Louisiana. Hey, Cornelius, go ahead now.
Hey, George. I'm sort of glad you called me Corny. Like I said, I hadn't heard that since high school. Mr. Horn, God bless you, son. Look, I was asking Tommy, and I'm more on biblical prophecy, and I want to know, do you think this follows biblical prophecy? And also, Mr. Horn, I'd like, if you could, at the end of the program, if you have a toll-free number, because I don't have a computer, I'd like to get all that information from your books or in their DVDs. So God bless y'all, and have a nice evening.
All right, let me try to answer that for Cornelius. The information in this case, I have to always say that because there are things I cannot prove. You and I can now prove the case is real, but I can't prove that everything in it is real because some of it pertains to the far distant past, some of it pertains to the as yet unarrived future. Here is information according to this case. According to this case, the real prophecies and predictions of Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Enoch, Elijah, and Jeremiah, and Emmanuel. Cornelius, Emmanuel is the name that Meyer and his extraterrestrial human being friends say was the actual real given name of the man who we call incorrectly Jesus Christ. This is one of the most controversial aspects of the case.
And what do you mean by we call him incorrectly Jesus Christ? What
because according to the information in the case, no man by that name ever lived, and a man named Emmanuel did live. He was crucified. I mean, I'll fill in the details. But an interesting thing that has come forward even in the past couple of weeks, there is no historical record for anyone ever named Jesus Christ. And beyond that, there were 60 historians alive during that period living in the overall area, and not one of them ever referred to a man named Jesus Christ, a man who could walk on water and raise the dead, and nobody mentions him as a historian. Interestingly, though, and Cornelius might like this part, when you go into the Old Testament, as I did a bit, just a little bit in the process of my researching all this, I stumbled upon Isaiah 7:14, and his name shall be called Emmanuel. And then, cracking open the New Testament and kind of leafing through, I found, I think it's Matthew 1:23, and his name shall be called Emmanuel. This is one of the things in the Meyer case that has earned Billy the target on his forehead and chest and everywhere else. Here's what happened. In 1964, Billy Meyer knows a man named Issa Rashid, a Greek Orthodox priest living at the time in Jerusalem. Issa Rashid and Billy Meyer are telepathically led to an area that Rashid had been led to before. On the outskirts of old Jerusalem, there's a burn, a small hillside, and Meyer is poking around and finds a small hole, like an opening into this hillside. They dig it, they open it, they are able to enter inside, and what they find themselves in is an ancient, ancient, ancient tomb with stones on the floor. And they go about lifting the stones here and there because Meyer knew there was something there. He had also been told about this before. And what they found, among other things, were several resin-encrusted, animal skin-wrapped scrolls written in Aramaic, a language that Issa Rashid just so happened to be able to read along with German, the language that Meyer speaks. The scrolls were entrusted to Issa Rashid, and he took them back in 1964, and for several years in his spare airtime worked to translate. By 1970, he sent about a third of these scrolls, which came to be known as the Talmud of Emmanuel. And he sent them, translated into German, to Meyer, who publishes them for the first time in about 1978 in German. In the meantime, between those times, 70, 78, Issa Rashid and his family flee from Jerusalem. He writes to Meyer saying, there are people here that have found out that I have these scrolls. I'm not safe. We're going to leave. I'll get back to you if I can. In 1970, well, the next thing that happens is Issa Rashid and his family go into a refugee village in Lebanon, and they hide the scrolls in the wall of a building there. Within 1 week of his arrival with his family in that village and his sequestering the scrolls in the wall, the Israeli military comes in and virtually destroys the entire village. Issa Rashid and his family escape with their lives into Iraq. 4 years later, in 1974, Meyer finds out that Rashid and his entire family had been machine gunned to death, ostensibly by the Mossad. Again, I'm telling the story as we know it. However, in 1978, Meyer publishes the Talmud of Emmanuel, and in German. And then in about 1990, the first English translation. These years are important because of things that are in this book. In 1990, James Deardorff finds this book in English, and he says, aha, this looks to me to be a Bible hoax. I'm going to go after it. Now, James Deardorff at the time is a professor at Oregon State University, meteorology, comparative religions, is a very educated man. Within the next 2 years, he comes out with a book called Celestial Teachings, and James Deardorff makes the following claim. The Talmud of Emmanuel is the original document upon which the book of Matthew is based, not the other way around. It resolves over 320 inconsistencies, 250 of which were known, but 120, 150, whatever, weren't known at the time this book was published, and yet it resolves them. For scholars to read this, they are going to have to understand, and they will recognize, if they're honest, this is the original writing. Now, in this book, and what is so potent in here, I know that Cornelius asked about prophecy, so here's something about prophecy, allegedly from the man Emmanuel, who we came to be falsely called, again, according to this, Jesus Christ. He is confronting the scribes and the Pharisees, and he's saying to them, and I've got to paraphrase because I don't have it in front of me, as you have persecuted the true prophets of the past, and those would be, of course, Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, you will persecute me. But in 500 years, another man comes. He will also be a true prophet. And although his teaching will, like mine, be corrupted and falsified, and it will be turned into a false and evil cult, and the followers of that cult will give in the future your distant descendants no peace until the end of time, unless your distant descendants make a just and honorable peace with the distant descendants of the rightful owners of these lands, which you have stolen. Oh, boy. So Emmanuel is confronting the scribes and Pharisees and saying, your forefathers stole these lands, and the laws of cause and effect, and all these things, you cannot escape that this will bring bad fruit to you. So unless your distant descendants make a just and honorable peace with the distant descendants of these lands, the Palestinian people, both of these peoples will come to a bitter end. And he describes the destruction of Jerusalem that reads like an atomic holocaust. He says that in these future times, men will make carts that travel on the lands and the sea and in the air. They will create weapons whereby they will hurl the very cornerstones of life, atomic, the atom, against each other. And in certain cases, they will set fire to the oil, and it will burn and darken the skies. Do you remember the Gulf War?
Sure do.
Well, this was already published in 1978 in German, and it was ostensibly from the original writing, the original teaching of the man whose name was Emmanuel, who was crucified.
Michael, let me ask you this, though. The Bible does make reference to a Yeshua.
Right. Well, I am not an expert in the Bible, but however, if that name was changed, and it would be for the people who are really, you know, more biblically minded to see if that is correlating with Emmanuel. There are people, you know, there are people that have said, well, his name was, Yeshua ben Joseph or this or that. These are things that I am not knowledgeable about, so I can't comment there.
Okay,
I'm sorry, George, go ahead.
Go ahead. I want to take some more calls here with you. Let's go east of the Rockies. Eli is in Toronto. Go ahead, Eli.
Hi, George, and...
Hello there.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, Eli.
In a way, you kind of answered my question, Michael. What I was going to ask was, in terms of Meyer, how do you see this correlating with the book of Revelation?
Well, Meyer's
prophecy...
I've only looked at that once or twice in my life. What I would say is my recollection, and you may correct me, is that there was a lot of symbolism in Revelation that is open to interpretation, even as, you know, some people may say is the case with Nostradamus. The prophecies and predictions published by Meyer, if we look at the ones of Elijah and Jeremiah, I mean, they're so horrendously specific, where you get in these Henoch prophecies where they're naming America and Russia and all that didn't even exist in those times. But those prophets were powerful, powerful consciousness. They saw into this future. So I cannot answer in terms of Revelation. I would only say that from my perspective, these things that we can look at today and which have been available to us prior to the events occurring are right there for us to think our way through. And if we don't want this stuff to fulfill, if we really don't want this country destroyed, where they go farther, every American city is going to be annihilated, unless we change, and there are ways to do it, yes, it sounds insurmountable, I understand, but we've been trying, you know, for a while to get people to look at this fairly so they'll understand this is not eye candy. This isn't about starting religions or cults or UFO groups or anything. It's about a whole other level. It's warnings from people who have the technology and the capability and are trying, because they have already foretold that by 2020, if we don't change in this country, this is anarchy, and there are two civil wars coming to this country. Meyer published that as far back as 81 and 87. So,
and
can
these events be altered? I mean, we have free will here, right?
Yes, if we get onto it. If we keep on kind of slapping ourselves a little bit awake and taking a cold shower and going, okay, let's... Are we going to grapple here a little bit? And here's the beauty of it.
Hold on for a second, Michael. We'll hit the break. We'll talk about free will. I want you to tell us what Billy Meyer sees in the future, and we'll take final calls on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to be talking about a 3,000-year-old mystery that holds the secret of America's future. Make sure you're part of that program and a special anniversary program as well, because of the 13th anniversary of the tragedy of 9/11. We will be back in a moment with Michael Horn as we talk more about the Billy Meyer case, and we'll take your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Michael Horn with us. Michael, as controversial as your work is, you got to be congratulated for your really in-depth work and study of Billy Meyer and what he has done.
Well, thanks, George. You know, when you're interested and passionate about something, it's it's just your pleasure to do it, I guess is the best way to put it. I think you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Okay, Cornelius had wondered if you had a toll-free phone number. Do you have one for those who aren't computer savvy?
No, I've got a 310 number.
But you don't want to give that out.
I can give it out. You know, it rings in my computer, fortunately, and not on a regular phone. But if people leave messages, if they don't reach me, I return all my calls and all my email. But I'll give the number out, which is, well, let's see.
Let's do it right at the end. Well, let's do it right at the end of the show.
Certainly.
Okay.
Certainly.
And let me ask you before we take more calls, what prophecy of Billy Meyer has he spoken about in that will affect the future? What do we have the next few years out?
Well, I think if we go right to, back to one of the things we started with earlier pertaining to Russia, Scandinavia, Canada, and the U.S., this is a very clear pattern that we're literally in right now. I probably posted a link on my page that I have for your listeners where they can start to see the updates on the situation between, you know, we're focused a lot on Russia, Ukraine, but what's going on in the Arctic and what's going on with Russia and Scandinavia, the war games that Sweden or Norway are even partaking of, this is happening now. And we don't want to be like deer in the headlights. We don't want to sit, you know, staring at the future coming at us like a, you know, a freight train, and then say to ourselves, well, what's next? Because what's next is just that. What's next, if we don't stop this, there is a world war of a magnitude that we've never experienced before. Three-quarters of the population of the world would be lost. The northern hemisphere would be radioactive for years and years, obviously, to come. So, and I don't like to, you know, do the doom and gloom thing, because we got ourselves to a place now we can say, okay, anybody can prove the case is real. These prophecies are fulfilling right now in front of our eyes. So, well, you know, what are we going to do about this? That's where we want to, you know, move it towards, because otherwise there will be some people somewhere talking about why didn't they listen? You know, I mean, really, why didn't people pay attention? What were these extraterrestrials spending 72 years and 72 years of Billy Meyer's life trying to do this in a way that was slightly oblique? It didn't inflict on us. They didn't prove their presence by landing all over and throwing us into panic. They gave us this information. It was heard on coast to coast. It was publicized, and people had the opportunity to even ask what they could do. And then they could be shown, here's the free information, folks. I've got it on my website. And then if you're interested, I can show you how you can look at this. And, you know, it's free. Yeah, it'd be great. You want to buy some films? It helps keep me going. But you know what? This mission is really about a gift, a treasure to humanity, and it's not charged for. Yes, you can learn more. There's books Billy's written that, you know, they pay to publish, and so you can buy them. The Might of the Thoughts is the most brilliant book on thinking ever written. We carry it on our website. And yet, if you don't have the money for that stuff, I've got tons of stuff on the website, on the blog, and sites linked to it. You can be reading for months and never spend a penny, and you can learn what this is. This is a mission that has spanned well over, it's over 13,500 years old. That's the mind-boggling part of this. So there you have it.
Okay, let's go to some final calls here. West of the Rockies, we've got Tony in Seattle. Welcome to the program. Hi, Tony.
Hey, good evening, George. Hello, Mr. Horn.
Hi, Tony.
Hi. Yeah, George, real quick. First of all, with all due respect, Mr. Horn, I agree with a lot of what you're saying, but I think at the point we can disagree is that these people, or excuse me, these aliens, if there's good and bad aliens, you know, we can't be fooled and just go with the majority of the people, because that's how we got Obama. And if we, the Bible also does quote, it doesn't say Russia and America, it says the bear and the eagle will fight. And also that aliens, how do I say this, George? Well, let me just say it this way. 911, my spirit just felt a total change in the way of the system of the world. And now, well, what's happening is, I agree with you, Mr. Horn, that this time we're in real trouble. But if we all think one like-minded Christ, but if the aliens are telling Billy Meyer that this is happening, then why don't they just say, look, come down here and this is us. This is who we are, because they might be deceiving us. And I appreciate everything you're doing, though. And thank you, George. You have a
good
evening.
You're welcome, Tony. You too. Go ahead, Michael. I'll let you react.
Yeah, sure. Here's the way to answer it. Tony, first of all, nobody's coming to save us. We have made this mess, we human beings of Earth, and all that can be done without violating our free will and without messing things up more is to give us recommendations, advice, information, and then it is our responsibility what we do with it. This is a very delicate thing. You're a person of a given faith. There are people of dozens, even what, possibly hundreds of other faiths in the world, all of whom have different beliefs and interpretations. The last thing we need are ships descending from the skies that are going to either cause some people to worship them automatically as gods, fear them as enemies, drive people into psychosis, et cetera, et cetera. So when we speak about evil aliens or good aliens, as far as I'm concerned, we don't have proof of any other actual race other than these people right now, if we deduce from the evidence. So I'm not worried about them, because they could have taken over this world 72 years ago instead of just sitting back and feeding information and evidence into us for us to figure it out ourselves. So I don't feel that they're a danger.
Okay, back to the calls. Matt is in North Carolina now. Hey, Matt, go ahead.
Thank you, George.
Sure thing.
I got a question for guests there. I have in my collection of UFO memorabilia, whatever you want to call it, bilia, a point where Billy Meyer's ex-wife came out and spoke. And she said, and don't get me wrong, I am not a disbeliever in UFOs. I've seen them a couple times in my life. Billy Meyer's ex-wife came out to the media, and they went out there and documented this with her, where she said Billy Meyer took a trash can lid, and they showed the trash can lid that she suggests that he threw or whatever and took photographs of. And it was the same exact thing that they showed when they photographed it in the media as the photographs that Billy Meyer had in his photographs. And
okay, let me answer you.
Hang on one second. I understand that some of the photographs that Billy Meyer took and some of the things that people took in the interim got mixed up with what Billy Meyer really took. So I understand there is a difference in some of that. I really do. I'm not a disbeliever, and I understand that people mix things up and jumble things, and that's the way things happen. But I want to know what you have to say about that, his ex-wife saying that.
Okay, right, sure. I'd be happy to do that. First, you have to know that his wife, who's now his ex-wife, you know, these are human beings. Nobody's perfect, and people, you know, even extraterrestrial contactees can have a marriage fall apart after 30 years. Here's the deal. She, his now ex-wife, and 16 other people, including Meyer, took lie detector tests specifically administered about the authenticity of the Meyer case, him and the contacts. She passed 100% truthful in support of his authenticity. In addition to that, she gave a video interview, which the original investigators have, saying that the case is authentic. She has seen the ships for herself. She saw one of the extraterrestrials herself. I know two of their sons, the most vocal of whom has come out and is in one of our films saying, of course this is real, this is true. He is shown in one of the videos as a child with his drawing of the ships. The other son, who's got issues with his father, and this became a whole scandal online, said, look, Oh, of course the contacts are real, but I'm mad at my father because I don't think he was a good father to me. You have to understand also that after the divorce, the wife suddenly had a bank account that got very inflated, and a skeptic named Luke Bergen affiliated himself with her, and then she started saying it was a hoax. The trash can lid you're talking about, we covered earlier in the show. The photograph of that is the one that you yourself can put into Photoshop now and prove its authenticity for yourself. I hope that helps.
Okay, Jesse's now in Kentucky. Jesse, you're up.
Hi, good evening, good morning, Mr. Norrie, Mr. Horn. Great to speak with you again. I had a couple of questions for you, Mr. Horn, and I'll take my answers off the air. My first question is, was Billy Meier ever familiar with the work of Edgar Casey? And have their prophecies ever been compared and contrasted? And my second question, would you please repeat the name of your website for me? Thank you so much, y'all. Bye-bye.
Sure, dear. Billy Meier has written that Edgar Casey was a true seer. He had the ability to do and was quite accurate, mainly especially with the medical readings that he did. He's regarded as a real true seer. He did not do the type of prophetic work in detail, though he has some that Meier did. So they regard him, and they actually... This will sound funny, and it's not meant to be funny nor offensive. Casey had a certain type of a schizophrenia where this ability of his, which was only available to him when he would go, I think he would go into a trance or sleep-like trance or go to sleep, and then he could do this. So technically, they said he had a very unique type of a schizophrenia where he was able to go in and get all of this very interesting and largely accurate information. Edgar Casey did a reading in which he said there was a large spacecraft under the Great Pyramid of Egypt. That happens to have been true. Meier was taken below the Great Pyramid, shown that craft, and there was an extraterrestrial race based there for several thousand years that was connected to the gods of our past, that also was negatively influencing a lot of people on the planet, and that was a driving force behind the Thule Society, the occult group that was behind Hitler. This information is also on my website, which is called theyfly.com. You can probably find it also linked from George's coast-to-coast page there, too. So any and all of this, I'm glad to try to get back to you with emails, but it takes me a little while.
Okay, thank you. Let's go next to Robert in Victorville, California. First-time caller. Robert, you're up with us. Go ahead.
Hey, George, how you doing? I've been listening to coast-to-coast since I was 19. I'm 35 now.
Thank you.
I'm not a skeptic by all means. I believe in most of the Billy Meier case. I came across this maybe a few days ago. I was on the internet, and the one thing you haven't spoke about tonight was the picture of, I think her name was Oscar, the Palladian woman, or actually two of them. Yes.
Right.
And what I saw on there was that supposedly it was a picture that Billy Meier took of his TV from an old 1970s Ed Sullivan show that showed these dancers or the backup dancers on there, and they put the two photos side by side, the still frame of the part of the show and Billy Meier's picture he supposedly took, and it looked exactly the same down to the curtains and everything in the background. I'm not trying to debunk anything. I mean, like I said, I believe in most of it. I just wanted to know what your thoughts were
sure
on that.
Glad to answer it for you. The woman's name was Asket, A-S-K-E-T.
Yes.
Here's a quick note on it. She was also seen by somebody else, a woman who is now a retired U.N. diplomat, 12 years in the General Assembly. As a child, she saw Asket in India when Meier was photographing the ships, and this woman was walking and talking. But let's answer your question. It's claimed that Asket and Mira really are two dancers from the Dean Martin show. Now, I have on my website a whole page on this showing that, number one, they are not the same person, the photos aren't the same, had the photograph of Ascot, which was altered by other parties, but had that photograph been taken off the TV, there would have been lines from the cathode ray tubes of that time. There are none. There was no videotape available when Meyer actually took his photo. I had the book itself in which Meyer is told in advance, I think it was 3 years in advance, that his photos, he could only have the photos of Ascot and Nira, but that there was a problem because there were two American women who were entertainers who were virtually doubles. This was published before the whole thing about the Ascot and Nira photos ever came out. If you search on my website, and if you have any trouble with that, send me an email, you will find the whole page and analyses showing that they're not the same person.
We are almost out of time, Michael Horn. Would you give out your website, sir?
I'd be delighted. Thank you, George. It's theyfly.com. There's theyflyblog.com. I have a special offer for all the listeners. You can get two of the great films that we've got, two awards, just won recently by my new film. It's a special. You can find it on my website. The spiritual teaching stuff I alluded to, so much of it is free. If you're interested in this, please, please write. Send me an email. I answer everybody. This is meant for all of us. I hope that we will indeed listen and that we will not let the opportunity pass to play our part in changing our lives. Thank
Michael
you so
Horn,
much.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Be well.
Thank you, George.
Michael Horn, as we talk about the incredible work of Billy Meyer, you've got to look at those photographs if you've never seen them before. And on our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to be talking about a 3,000-year-old situation that affects the future of the United States. It's truly a mystery. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borles, George Knapp and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.